I've been reading up on them on the internet, and scientifically speaking, there are all sorts of strange phenomena attached to them that have yet to be explained. It's an unconventional approach, I know, but as Professor Tamashii says, science is the realm of the formerly impossible.
But what happens if the nuns catch you?
It's a chance we have to take,
Ruprecht says.
The Condor flies tomorrow night, Skip,
Dennis says.
There's still room on our team for one more.
Well, even if I wanted to, I couldn't go tomorrow, Skippy says. That's when I'm going to Laurie's house. Another time, Skippy might have been jealous of Dennis and his new role at the centre of Ruprecht's life. Tonight, as he lies in bed, he is thinking only of tomorrow. Not Dennis, not Carl, not pills, or the swim meet, or Operation Condor. Tomorrow and nothing else. He's so excited, he doesn't know how he'll ever get to sleep. But he must do, because next thing at 6 a.m, and he's plunging, pow, into fresh chlorine. The lucky boys who made the cut have extra training all this week, a half hour every morning before the others start. Through the Perspex roof, the sky is still pitch dark. It could be midnight. From the side of the pool, Coach claps a rhythm, while they race up and down, an endless journey over the same short distance. Breaststroke, backstroke, butterfly, crawl. Skippy's arms and legs do the movements by themselves, while he floats somewhere inside his body like a passenger. In flashes, through foam, Garrett Dennehy and Siddhartha Nyland appear in the parallel lanes either side, like fragments of reflections. Different Skippies in different worlds. Outside the showers, while the others are washing, the team huddles round, arms folded across slippery, cold bodies, listening to Coach with serious, grown-up expressions. There's only 3 days left before the meet. He gives them the itinerary and assigns them their buddies for the trip.
Daniel, you'll partner with Anthony as before.
Ha-ha! Tough shit, Juster.
Anthony Air Raid Taylor, the loudest snorer in the whole school, who cannot be woken till morning once he falls asleep, unless you throw a bucket of water over him.
Okay, hit the showers. And remember, take care of yourselves over the next few days. No horseplay. I don't want all that good work going to waste because someone's pulled a muscle wrestling or stood on a nail.
On a nail, on glass, on acid, on burning coals. Or you walk under scaffolding and a girder drops on top of you. Or you get burned in a fire. Or you're kidnapped by terrorists. When you think about it, there are so many things that could go wrong. But Skippy's not thinking about it. His brain is full of Laurie, 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 Laurie. He can't think of anything else. Through swimming, through breakfast, German, religion, art, the thought of her making everything beautifully unreal, like the last days of school, when you're walking along the edge of June, and though class hasn't ended, summer's creeping into everything, like spilled orange juice through the pages of your copybook. Summer that's stronger than school. Laurie, that's like a one-girl summer. In English, they're doing a poem called The Road Not Taken, about this guy Robert Frost in a wood, reading which Mr. Slattery becomes unaccountably emotional.
A life, you see, a life, Frost is saying, is something that must be chosen, just like a path through a wood. The tricky thing for us is that we live in an age that seems to present us with a whole raft of choices, a maze of ready-made paths. But if you look more closely, many of them turn out to be simply different versions of the same thing. To buy products, for example, or to believe whatever prefabricated narratives were offered to believe in, a religion, a country, a football team, a war. The idea of making one's own choices of, for example, not believing, not consuming, remain as less travelled as ever.
Hey, Skip!
Mario hisses, leaning across Jeff to poke Skippy in the arm.
Have you got a present to bring to your lady?
I need to bring a present. Mario claps his hand to his forehead.
Mamma mia! It is no wonder you Irish remain virgins until you are 40.
At lunch break, they walk up to the shopping mall to get Laurie a present. All the money in his wallet buys Skippy the second smallest box of chocolates. On the way back, Dennis, who has been unusually quiet this lunchtime, speaks up.
I've been thinking about that Robert Frost poem. I don't think it's about making choices at all.
What's it about, so?
Jeff says.
Anal sex.
Anal sex?
How do you figure, Dennis?
Well, once you see it, it's pretty obvious. Just look at what he says. He's in a wood, right? He sees two roads in front of him. He takes the one less traveled. What else could it be about?
Woods?
Going for a walk?
Don't you listen in class? Poetry's never about what it says it's about. That's the whole point of it. Obviously, Mrs. Frost, or whoever, isn't going to be too happy with him going around telling the world about this time he gave it to her up the bum. So, he cleverly disguises it by putting it in a poem, which, to the untrained eye, is just about a boring walk in some gay wood.
But, Dennis, do you think Mr. Slattery'd be teaching it to us if it was really about anal sex?
What does Mr. Slattery know?
Dennis scoffs.
You think he's ever taken his wife up the road less travelled?
Puh, when have you ever gone up the road less travelled?
Mario challenges. Dennis strokes his chin.
Well, there was that magical night with your mother.
I tried to stop her.
Ducking out of the way as Mario swings at him.
But she was insatiable. Insatiable!
Passing back beneath the tattered sycamores, they see a commotion at the entrance to the basement. Boys are milling around, wisps of smoke gusting over their heads. As they approach, Mitchell Gogan detaches himself from the group rubbernecking at the door and arrives breathlessly at their side.
Hey, Juster!
Barely able to contain his glee.
Isn't your locker number 181?
Yes, and it's on fire. Skippy squeezes through the crowd to find flames coursing up the open door, roaring proprietorially in the interior. Sparks shoot up to the ceiling and descend again, trailing soot like downed aeroplanes. Boys watch, grinning, their faces dyed a hellish orange. And in the midst of them, staring at him with eyes that in the gothic light are like the windows of an empty house, is Carl. Skippy gapes back in horror, unable to look away. Then from behind him comes a gravelly voice, and Noddy emerges through the bodies, his lumpy troll face flushed red, the fire extinguisher in his hand.
Ah, Jesus!
He shouts.
What the fuck's this?
He aims the extinguisher, and the crowd, with a single howl of delight, leaps backward as foam cascades into the flames. In less than a minute, the fire is out. The boys disperse, but Skippy hovers shamefacedly as Noddy pokes through the charred contents, taking care of any embers.
This is your locker, is it?
He accosts Skippy.
Do you have fireworks in there, or lighter fluid, or something?
Skippy shakes his head mutely, gazing into its sodden black heart.
So how'd this happen, Sol?
Noddy's rancid breath blasts against his nostrils. Through the miasma of smoke, he can see Carl watching him, motionless as a waxwork. I don't know.
I don't know.
The janitor mouths, turning back to the devastated locker.
Well, the whole thing's fucking banjaxed. Here, where are you going? Give me your name. You!
But Skippy's broken free and reeled away. Next thing he knows, he's in his dorm room. The sky in the window is icy cold. Particles of soot cling to the ribbons of the microscopic box of chocolates. Without thinking, he finds himself reaching for the pills. Then he stops. Dennis, Jeff, Ruprecht and Mario have appeared behind him. Arranged in the doorway, musicians of Bremen style, regarding him somberly. What? He says.
Are you all right, Skip?
I'm fine.
Was there a lot of stuff in there?
It doesn't matter.
What are you going to do?
What do you mean? There is a pause, an exchange of looks, and then Ruprecht.
Skippy, I think what happened to your locker may not have been an accident.
You can't go to Laurie's house, Skip.
Jeff blurts.
Carl will kill you.
I'm going to go. Skippy is adamant. Carl's not going to stop me.
But, Skip, what if he does stop you?
He can try, Skippy says defiantly.
What's that supposed to mean?
Maybe it's time someone stopped him. He doesn't even know it's what he's thinking until the words leave his mouth. But as soon as they do, he knows he means it.
What are you talking about? You don't stand a chance against him.
This way, you're going to lose the girl and get stomped into the ground.
And you've got a race in 3 days.
Jeff remembers.
Skippy, how will you be able to race if you're stomped into the ground? Skippy?
Downstairs, bitter smoke from the cheap wood of the locker still inflects the air, and heads turn and snicker at Skippy as they drift back to class. He ignores them, sweeping the hallway from left to right, until there, in the doorway of the mechanical drawing room, he sees him. The only person Skippy knows whose back looks angry. Heart beating in his ears like a kettle drum, with a momentum that seems to come from elsewhere. He moves through the tunnel of air connecting the two of them, and stretches out his hand to tap Carl on the shoulder. Around them, the corridor comes to a standstill. In the doorway, Carl slowly turns, and his bloodshot eyes fall emptily on Skippy. They show no sign of knowing who he is. They show no sign of anything. It is like staring into an abyss, an infinite, indifferent abyss. Skippy swallows, then in one quick rush charges, "You set fire to my locker!" Carl's expression doesn't alter. When at last he speaks, it's as if every word is a dead weight that must be hauled up with chains and pulleys from the bottom of his feet.
What are you going to do about it?
Apologize. Walk away. Thank him for doing such a thorough job. After school, Skippy says, praying his voice won't break. Behind the swimming pool. You and me. A low buzz emanates from the encircling crowd. It takes a moment for Carl to react. Then slowly his jaw drops and a leaden series of laughs come out.
Ha, 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 ha.
The hollow laugh of a robot that laughs without knowing why things are funny. Gently he places a hand on Skippy's shoulder and, leaning into his ear, whispers,
"You faggot. I'm going to kill you."
Within minutes, the news is all over school. No way out now, even if he wanted it. The general response seems to be simple mystification.
"You're going to fight Carl?"
Skippy nods.
"You are?"
Skippy nods again.
"He's going to massacre you."
Titch or Vince Bailey or whoever it is says. Skippy just about manages a shrug. "Well, good luck," they say, and wander off. All through class, faces keep flicking back to Skippy, scrutinizing him like he's a 10-foot lizard sitting there at the desk. And the day, which had been going so torturously slowly, begins to hurtle, as if time itself were panting to view the fight. Skippy tries to grasp on to the teacher's lessons, if only to slow things down. But it's as if the words themselves know they are not intended for him, and pass him by. This must be what it's like being dead, haunting the living, he thinks. Like everything is made of glass, too slippery to hold on to, so that you feel like you're falling, just standing still. 2 minutes after the final bell, the first boys arrive at the patch of gravel at the back of the annex. Enclosed by the swimming pool on one side, the boiler room and an ever-growing chaos of brambles on the others, it can't be seen from anywhere else in the school. Whenever there's a score to be settled, for as long as anyone can remember, this is where it's been done. In no time at all, the space is packed, and from the chatter it's clear there is little doubt about the outcome. The crowd's been drawn here, not by the promise of a close-fought battle, but by the chance to see some actual bodily harm.